This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 801. Brought to you by the Second Print Comics Podcast. Go to secondprintcomics.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And I have my listeners just like you who are washing hands, wearing masks, getting vaccinated, and also drinking water. It's important.
That's just a helpful tip.
Welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 801. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and this is my co-host, Josh Flanagan.
Hey there.
And we are iFanboy. We've made it through 800 episodes, and now we're starting again.
We're starting again? Are we rebooting?
No, we're just
keeping going. This is episode one, Legacy 801.
Right. We are iFanboy. We read our books every week, and one of us picks the favorite one they like the best. We call it the Pick of the Week. We'll talk about that book, the other books from the week, the patron pick, some listener mail if we have time. And we have fun. At the end of the day, we have a good time, hopefully. So do you.
Listen, don't tell me what to do. It's my choice.
Here's our spoiler warning. Exercise some caution because there'll be some spoilers this week. Josh, you had the pick with a book with a legacy number on it.
I don't know why I have to give the justification of the thing. But, mm-hmm. You know, this was the week where I kept finding new books I had to read. So by the end, my stack grew by like 50%. Uh-huh. And I ended up going at it much later than I thought. And, you know, at the end, I just had to like write them all down, mm-hmm. and like stare at a list for a little bit.
Did you make a bracket?
I didn't. No, I didn't.
We should start doing brackets.
That's more a Connor thing. I went gut. I went, all right, what am I feeling? And the thing that I picked was Captain Marvel number 33. Mm-hmm. And this is the last of the Marvels part two. It's just a random issue in the middle of a thing. And I think what happened was, I was reading the issue, and then as I got the end of it, and I read it early, you know, like,
mm-hmm. yes.
like you know, day and a half before I had to pick, and I sort of finished it and thought, that was a lot of fun. And it I was. Also thought, these have been a lot of fun.
They have.
And I think one of the, like, I haven't been reading this series all along. In fact, it's just sort of, without really meaning to, I've been dropping in and out of it. And every time I come back in, I'm fine. Like, yeah. I'm not lost. I know who the characters are. I think Carol Danvers is a real it's not one of those things where like no one can figure out what her character is. Like I know who she is. The writer has been with her for a long time. She knows who she is, so it's familiar in that way. She has a fun cast of characters around who come in and out. It's one of the only books that I really like Tony Stark in. And what I mean by that is Tony Stark's in every book. And so it doesn't really... He is. He's in every book. He's always...
in a lot of books. He's in a lot of
and
books.
Every time one of the books needs him, he's always just hanging out in his lab. And I'm like, when does he do anything else? Because he's in the lab in every book. They just drop by and he's always like, you could have called. And it's like, ah. Anyway, but I like him in this book because he's, since Civil War, he's been such a great foil for her. And they have an interesting relationship. That I kind of forget about, and then I remember, that's why this is interesting. I do not really know who the villain is in this, Vox Populi.
Yeah, that villain's been around the whole series, and I don't even really know.
I don't really care, though. Issue.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter.
I mean, but the thing is it Vox Populi, or is it just Vox? Am I just pulling out random Roman...
It might have started off the second one, and it's a Vox Supreme now.
Vox Supreme,
It's all tied into her Kree heritage.
So there's some vague symbiote like thing that this comes out of King in Black, maybe.
No, it's similar idea though. It's
so they
it
get
just
gunk
seems
on
to
them.
Be the Kree are attacking all the Captain Marvel characters,
right? And so she's got to go and warn and help save anybody who's been some form of a Captain Marvel before. And it's an adventure, and there's stakes because all the people that she cares about are being attacked, and it's because of her and blah, blah, blah. There
it's
was
a fun
this
way
moment.
To have a team up with all the, you know, it's like there's,
yeah,
you know, get her and Kamala Khan, and you get, what's her name? Spectrum.
Yeah,
well, you know,
that's
Monica,
like, when she yelled,
Rambo.
So at one point, like, one of the people attacking, basically the people who attack her are her friends encased in these outfits. And at one point, Spectrum, who is Captain Marvel, who is Photon, who is Monica Rambeau, sort of wills herself out of the thing because she's fighting the mind control, whatever. Carol Danvers yells, Spectrum? And I had no idea who that was. Because they've changed the name of that character so many times. Yeah. And like, just keep her Photon or yell Monica.
I think it's funny that she was Captain Marvel when we were kids, right?
Yes.
So it took until WandaVision, until I actually heard her name said out loud. Mm-hmm. And I was like, her last name is Rambo. Like, I don't think it ever occurred to me
that... Were you reading it in phonetic French?
Yeah,
oh, that's Monica Rambeau.
I
got
more of an accent when I read it, but like, you know, in the show they kept going, Monica Rambeau, and I was like, oh, right, her name is Rambeau. Anyway.
Technically, Rambeau in the movie is just an anglicized respelling of that.
That's true. He's also French heritage. She also has her own, like... You know, regular supporting cast of Spider Woman and War Machine and
Hazmat for some reason.
Hazmat, yeah.
Well, she and War Machine have a
they're banging, yeah.
Yeah.
Just be real about it. That's what they're doing. They're in love and they're banging. But it's been a fun little book. I mean, you know, we joked about the numbering of the show in the beginning, but how impressive and how awesome would it be if this was issue 167 instead of issue 33?
It would be how it's supposed to be.
Like a Captain Marvel book, traditionally speaking, wouldn't, you know, let's just be honest, wouldn't get this high, but it has because she's really popular. She's become really popular in the last 20 years, and it would be awesome if this was issue 167, but it's not. It's issue 33.
Yeah. The other thing that I sort of noted was that when I talked to Kelly on Talksplode, year and a half ago, you should go get it. It's one of my favorite episodes. She had said something like she's very wary about her ability to do action scenes. Like that's she's like, that's not the thing I do really well. I do the people talking and the relationship and the funny and the.
Which
you know.
Is crazy because she does great action.
Well, and no, that's what I came. I go, these are great action scenes, and all through that Black Widow book were great action scenes. And you know, my guess is A, she probably wasn't as bad at it as she thought she was, and B, she's gotten really good at it. Like she's, you know, she does a lot of comics. You get better at those kind of things, and
she has no holes in her game.
No,
she's good at everything. Which
yeah,
and
with a voice that's a little bit her own, but enough that it isn't instantly identifiable. It's not like I read it and I go, oh, this is Kelly Thompson. But very afterwards, I go, oh, yeah, that was Kelly Thompson.
Yeah.
You know.
And you mentioned at the top of this review that it's, you know, the second issue, it's the middle of a story arc. It wasn't the start of an arc that like sort of blew our socks off or the end of an arc that was satisfying. It's like the very solid middle. And I would call this book like that. Like it's not going to be the best book Marvel's putting out. It's not going to be like usually not holy shit that you read that issue, but it's always very good.
Yeah. It's a strong and specific form of gosh.
Yeah.
Of good old superheroes. It's kind of the comic book that I consider to be like a Marvel, we'll call it an 80s Marvel aesthetic that's modernized, which is was my favorite kind of superhero comic book. It's just like all this shit is going on and it's very tense and it's moving along, you know, but the friends are around and they come in and there's a threat and then the next week there's going to be another one. It's very serialized and frenetic, you know, but it's not the event thing every week though. It's not the end of the world. It's just this is their day and it's a big deal. And it's just super fun. I really like I had no complaints about it. And I was like, oh, this is what I want to read when I read one of these superhero comic books. And you know, in that way, that's why it's the pick of the week. That was the best thing I read this week. And I liked a lot of books I read.
And over the course of 33 issues, she's built up a really fun group. There's also the stepsister who's the Kree soldier. Like there's a nice tight family around Captain Marvel, but doesn't overshadow the character.
And a lot of these characters were in that last event, the Empire one.
Yeah.
And they were not interesting in there. So, you know, that sort of tells you what the difference, you know, of a voice can give to it.
Yes.
In this, they're great.
And it was legitimately like, oh shit, how's she gonna get out of that cliffhanger here? You know, this is like all you want in a serialized comic, you know. It had great characters, had a big action, it had an ending where I was like, shit, I don't know how she's going to get out of this, but we'll find out, I don't know, 2 weeks, next week, next month, I don't know, whenever these come out. So this was the final issue of Hey Kids Comics Volume 2 from Howard Chaykin, and it's really interesting, Josh. I'm glad you put this in the script. I wasn't even sure if I was going to suggest it if you hadn't, because I just don't know how I feel about this book. And we talked about a lot of the issues, and I like reading it, but we've talked about in the past about how I spent a lot of my time reading it from an academic standpoint as opposed to like reading the story. I don't know that there's an interesting story in here overall, as it is more of a series of scenes that I try to figure out how they fit into the real world. And I don't know if I step back and look at the story of Hey Kids Comics, I don't know that there's an interesting story here. Am I off base? It's just more like scenes from the comics industry, and all together, I don't know that they fit together well.
I think that you're absolutely right about all of the things that you just said. However, throughout the course of this, and I've gotten better at getting my bearings earlier in the issues than I was, I just enjoy the hell out of it.
I like reading it. I'm very happy when it comes out. In this issue, I took a step back and I was like, but what is the actual story here? You know, what are we actually doing?
It's the story of professionals in comic books from a very wide lens. Now, that's not necessarily a story in terms of like plot to go, but I consider it to be sort of like, and again, most of the time this doesn't work. That would be like, well, that's the wrong way to tell a story, but I can sit. It's the closest that I'm gonna get to hanging out with Howard Chaykin and having him give me his take on things.
Sure.
And you're getting to see him do that within his art.
But I also wonder, like, if you don't know the people in the stories, does this even make any sense to you? Because he doesn't. We just move from character to character, from time to time, to place to place, with no context or anything. So I was wondering, is this a disaster for someone who doesn't know anything about comics?
I had that thought too. I also wondered about the choice of. I wanted to play a game with you, and I wanted to go to the cast of characters at the beginning. And what happens is, I actually know the characters really well through the 60s, and then I don't know them.
Yeah, that is the best. I don't know who that is.
So, but I was wondering, the choice, because he's making a choice, he's not naming these people, and he's not quite making them enough so that if you don't know something, you can look them up. You know what I mean? Like, right.
You have to know.
If you know kind of what comics was like in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, you can put those things together. As we get into the 70s and stuff, it's not quite as well, it's not as clear, I think. Like, I know one of these people is Roy Thomas, but I don't know which one because I don't know enough about Roy Thomas. You know what I mean?
I think it was the young editor at Verve, but I don't remember. I forgot which one he was.
Okay, so okay. Do you have the cast of characters out?
Yes, I do, yeah.
Okay. Dick Altman, GW editor. So GW is EC in this. Yeah. In this, I don't know who that is.
Yeah.
Nick Fontana, Yankee editor, Raritan. That's got to be Carmine Infantino.
Yeah, Carmine Infantino, yeah.
Okay. Paul Gertz, GW publisher. That's Gaines.
Yeah.
William Gaines from EC Mad Magazine. Arnold Grossberg, ex-GW editor, Right Place, Wrong Time, Endless Regrets. I'm not sure who that is.
Yeah.
Mort Weisinger, something. Who's the one that everyone hated? Is that no? Mort Weisinger is the one that everyone hated. So he's one of these people too. And then there's the one that everybody loved, Archie Goodwin. Like those are the two DC editors that were around forever that I know that everyone hated Mort and they loved Archie.
Yeah.
Okay. Alfred Kessler, artist who left comics. Hmm.
That's Kirby.
No, Kirby's Sid.
Oh, right. Kirby's Sid. He's not in this issue. Right.
Alfred Kester, artist who left comics, never stops looking back. In this, there's a scene where there's people in a class with him, and they say, hey, are you... It's Ditko, right?
Ditko, yeah, it's Ditko.
Okay. Jess Mayberg, Yankee editor, source of industry unity, everyone hates him. So that's...
Weisberg.
Mort Weisinger.
Yeah, Weisinger, yeah.
Okay. Bob Rose, Verb EIC, Showman First. That's Stan Lee.
Yeah.
Ray Clark, accomplished pro who always, that's Gil Kane.
Yep.
Benita Mendel or Benita Heindel is probably a bit of a conglomeration, but we think it's her name? Ramona Fraiden?
Yeah. But well, they haven't drawn Aquaman at one point, so
okay. Ramona Fraiden.
Or the Aquaman character, yeah.
Hector Menendez, writer, artist, funny, fast Mexican, two out of three.
Sergio Aragonés.
Okay. Ted Whitman. Now, I can't place him.
I have
him.
No idea. He's who Ted Whitman
the black
be.
Artist who's been in every one of these. There is also an age thing because, like, this started in the 40s right. And we're into the 80s now. So these people should be 60s, 70s, and they seem to be in their late 40s. Whatever. Benita and Ted specifically, at least, you know, they're the ones who've been around through the whole thing. Cause they're they're the ones who are most recognizable. There's the woman and there's the black man. They're the only ones that you can grab onto cause there's no one else like them in this. And I think that in this issue, by the way, the two of them, there's a really interesting conversation about them drawing and there was somebody, and it might have been the Stan Lee guy, telling them story. He's like, this is what it's like to be a black man. And the guy's like, whatever. And he draws it. And then the other panel. He's drawing
like
how
he's drawing like Luke Cage, the Luke Cage character. And the editor's like, you got to be more authentic to the black experience. He's like, all right.
Yep.
Sure.
And then he's talking about empowering women in the other one. And it's a really beautiful bit of storytelling. Yeah, okay, really moving along. Lee DeHoven, who knew monetizing the other was a viable career path. No idea.
Yeah. This is the point where, once you get here, I don't know who any of these people are.
Okay. Here's my, then Stan Kris, he's the guy who it all goes around. I think like he's the one who's the, I don't know if he's a Todd McFarlane guy, but he's the one who's signing at the end. And I'm trying to figure out who that is. I know he's like Todd McFarlane.
Yeah. He's somebody from the modern era. I don't know who,
then I'm not going to go through all the rest of them, but there's one which is John Mavridis and says fans consider him a revolutionary and he completely agrees. There's a scene in this book where they send somebody over to get a portfolio review for him and he makes them cry and they laugh because they said that's a thing. I think that's Neil Adams.
I would think that would be too. He'd be the only revolutionary. That would make sense.
But also this isn't, he completely agrees. That was the part that got
Neil
me.
Neil Adams, yeah.
Neil Adams is not yeah. And then as you go down, one of these guys has got to be Frank Miller. One of these
guys. Maybe that's Stan Kris.
I don't think it is because I don't know that he had. Maybe he did have the swagger.
He was younger for sure.
Colin James is an artist. He's currently nothing, but he's got something. I don't know. There's one other one, which is George Villiers, who says Space Saga is so loopy, his bong is tax deductible. And he's the guy, he's on acid in part of this, and he shows up somewhere else, he's got a blonde mustache.
Right.
And I was like, is that like one of those 70s Marvel guys? Like, so it's like space opera. So it's not Steve Englehart. One of the Marvel cosmic guys from the early 80s.
Starlin?
Starlin, maybe?
I don't know. That's part of the problem with the book.
So what I want to know, like, there's not enough there to go on if you don't know anything, which is what you're saying. But if you don't know everything, there's also missing parts.
Yes.
But in any other context, I think this would annoy the shit out of me, but I am so in love with the story of comics from a professional standpoint that I get through it. And it becomes a fun game because I have some context.
Yeah.
But I am guessing that a good portion, definitely a majority of listeners are like, get on to the, like, are, have already checked the show notes to see what
use time the show can notes. Skip. Utilize to. The show notes. I feel like the only people reading Hey Kids Comics Volume 2 at this point are people like you and me who have some idea what they're looking at. But otherwise, I don't know what. If you are reading this, have no idea about comics history, I'd love to hear what your thoughts on the book are.
Mm-hmm.
It's so dependent on you knowing these things.
They did a second volume,
right?
You know what I mean? Like,
maybe he just likes doing it. You know?
Yeah, I mean, but you can't lose all your money. I mean, he does most of the work, but he's basically just got to pay for printing. But still,
yeah. I mean, you just the Image takes their minimum fee. Maybe he just doesn't take any money. I don't know.
I can't imagine they're selling more than 5,000 copies of this.
Well, that would still turn a profit for it. For
yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, I mean, even that's very high. Anyway, I've all those things aside, I've enjoyed the living hell out of it, and I'm kind of bummed because this was the last one for now. Although he could, like, the next volume would be the 90s and 2000s, and I think that's rad.
The Amazing Spider-Man 75. Did you read this?
I did.
876 in your legacy numbering. I just like talking about the legacy numbering. So this is the first issue of the brand new Day Era Part 2. This is the post. We're post Nick Spencer. The Nick Spencer era that started us so promisingly. And now we're back to the formula that made Spider-Man a big success.
I like how you left the second clause off that. It started so promisingly. Anyway.
So we're back to having a team of creators, a book that comes out 3 times a month, just like with Brand New Day. And just like with Brand New Day, one of the writers is Zeb Wells, and he's doing the main story here with artist Patrick Gleason. And when Brand New Day happened, Zeb Wells was not a name I was super familiar with, but he quickly became one of my favorite people writing that book at the time, especially the stuff he did with Bachelot. And here, first of all, we've talked about in the past, Patrick Gleason's a terrific Spider-Man artist.
Yeah.
He's got great character models. He does Spider-Man really well. He does the big Spider-Man swinging action really well. Really dynamic page and panel layouts. And I thought this book was gorgeous in the opening story.
I agree with you on the penciling and the storytelling. There's something about the coloring I don't like.
Mm-hmm.
It's that glossy. It doesn't look right. I think it should have been a different type of production because it takes something away from it, I think, where the line art on its own is fantastic.
Could be.
I don't know what it is, but something I do, there's this is a style of coloring that I do not like.
So I have a base instinct when it comes to Spider-Man in which I tend, my rule tends to be go run and scream from anything to do with Spider-Clone. Like, I didn't read it when it came out originally. It literally almost tanked the book and the character. I don't like anything to do with Ben Reilly or any of these characters. So my instinct was to not read this or just to stop reading after this issue once I saw Ben Reilly was the focus of the story. However, the setup and tension here, I thought by the end was really interesting, where Peter Parker sold Parker Industries. And, you know, back when he had the company, and inside that sale was a trademark for Spider-Man that Otto Octavius had set up when he was in charge of Peter's body and consciousness. This sounds all very convoluted if you've never read Spider-Man. So technically speaking, this company bought the trademark for Spider-Man, and now Ben Reilly is their corporate Spider-Man. And Peter is sort of in trademark infringement of.
It's literally the Stan Lee story.
And so I was like, well, that's interesting. So you've got two Spider-Men running around. I mean, forget Miles Morales. He's a non-factor in the Marvel Universe. Two Spider-Men running around. And that's interesting. They keep showing up to the same things. And, you know, they don't work all that well together. And so it's kind of a mess. And then at the end, they're fighting. Who is this person that they're fighting? Somebody I've never heard of who is radioactive. And Ben Reilly's suit is protected against radioactivity, but Peter's isn't, and he gets really sick, and you know he's coughing up blood and passes out. Now, I know from the very little news I get that makes it through my news barrier, mostly from in the form of the press releases I get sent from Marvel, that sort of Ben Reilly's going to take over the focus of this book for a while, and that I'll probably stop reading it when that happens. But for this issue, I thought was really interesting, the dynamic.
Yeah, I kind of kept going downhill throughout it, and you know, like it was good. Like it was well written, it was engaging, it moved along, you know. But when Ben Reilly showed up, and I thought, oh, this is what this is going to be, you know, you're going to have this weird rivalry thing going and a legal battle. I kind of, and then at the end, you know, like I was like, this is, I see what, like, it's another replacement thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
And,
oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's reasons that that could be happening. And I think the main one is, like, we can't think of what else to do with this character, and it would be easier and maybe even more fun for the creators to sort of take a different one, but I don't find it interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. Like, I think a lot of times, like, well, why I read some of these books? Like, why do I read the Spider-Man book? Like, I'm not, like, super invested in Peter Parker, but when you take some creators who are kind of interesting to see what they can do with it, it's one thing, but put another character in there, and I'm much less invested. Like,
right.
It might be a great story, but I kind of don't care. Maybe I should. I don't know. I don't know where my bias is helping me or hurting me there.
Yeah, I just don't know. I don't know what I'm going to do. If indeed Peter's being, you know, sidelined for Ben Reilly, I probably won't read it. I don't care about Ben Reilly. I actively think he's a bad idea to keep reintroducing. It's like we talked about this before with Ultimate Spider-Man when they brought that storyline in, and we talked about the hubris of it. Do you remember that?
Yes. Like,
we're going to make this thing work that almost destroyed the entire comics industry.
Mm-hmm.
And just let it go. The problem with comics is, I get it, they got to come out every week. There's no hiatus, so you got to find stories where you can. But some things, yeah, it's okay to let them just go.
I think
let them go.
I think, so one thing that's interesting is that, like, when Miles Morales shows up with Peter Parker, it's usually pretty good. Like, you know, mm-hmm. like, it works. You know, when Ben Reilly shows up, and again, I wasn't around for most of this stuff, but, like, it just, I don't know the point. It just seems like it feels very, oh, we're going to push Spider-Man out of the, we're going to push Peter Parker out of the way now. And really, I feel like the company is always trying to decide, and by this I mean the publisher or the, mm-hmm. the larger sort of being of Marvel/Disney, is it the character who's interesting or is it the property that's interesting? So is it, like, are people showing up because it's Spider-Man or are people showing up because it's Peter Parker? And you and I are showing up because it's Peter Parker.
Yeah.
And all of these publishers are betting over and over again that that is not why. And I don't know how it's working out for them, and for theatrical purposes, I see why they have to do that or whatever. But in the comics, you do not have to do that. And so otherwise, it feels very forced, I think, every time we do it. Also, I just in the tiniest, I thought the last clone thing that they did over in Miles Morales Spider-Man worked pretty well. But it was a very different type of story. It was not related to this other thing.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it worked out okay, but this, not the same as this. Because this is all about things taking your place.
Right.
And taking over your life, and you know, and nobody ever did it better than, you know, it's sort of all related to that thing where Eddie Brock shows up, you know, mm-hmm. and he's insinuating himself in Peter Parker's life. And I feel like they were all trying to recapture that with the clones. Anyway, I'm all over the place. I didn't think it was bad, and I did not like it, but I'm not excited about it.
Then there was a second story from Kelly Thompson and Travel Foreman that was basically, you know, Misty Knight and Colleen Wing fighting frog creatures, and then Ben Reilly shows up, and that was fine.
The BPRD.
and then there was another Zeb Wells story that I basically, like, my eyes glossed over trying to read. It was drawn by Ivan Fiorelli, and it was something to do with cloning Electro, and it wasn't even like good Electro. It was movie Electro.
I didn't get it at all, but it looked good.
It looked really good, but my eyes was like, I don't really care. Stop talking about cloning things, Spider-Man. Jesus.
Yeah. Well.
So I'm gonna give it another read because I really did enjoy the main story. I'm just very concerned with where this is going.
I don't want to watch Peter Parker in getting through radiation sickness though. Like I'm so not interested in that story.
Yeah.
You know, like in Ditko saw a bunch of shit fall on him and he found the strength to push it off of him and walk away. I've seen it. You don't need to do it with radiation and cancer too. I don't need it. Like they did it. They did it in a page. It was great. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Like it's I'd say my second contender for pick of the week was Last Flight Out number 2.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very much in the same vein of, you know, I don't think it blew my socks off, but it was just like the last issue. I said, "Oh, this is super competent." Mm-hmm. You know, and it moves and it is compelling and I really want to know. It's one of those ones I got to the end of the issue and I was like, I want more. I want to know what happens next, and I want to know right now. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, in comics where we are forced to mainline them, you know, where we can fit the time in, you know, wanting to read more of something means that it is absolutely working. And what's interesting is that when I started reading this issue, this is the story of your Elon Musk type character, who's the smartest man in the world, and global warming has made it so that Earth will be uninhabitable, and so he has headed the project to take people away from Earth and find them a new place to be. And the whole time that his life has been going on, he has his wife died, and he is just so wrapped up in his own shit that he's basically left people to raise his daughter, and now she is an adult and she's pissed off about it. And then they're about to take off and he has to go rescue her. When I started the issue, I had no recollection of what the last one was. I was like two or three pages in and I was like, oh, it's also extremely similar to what is happening in the Why the Last Man TV series right now. Mm-hmm. And I had to adjust myself a little to like, oh, right. Okay, this isn't that, because it's almost the same thing.
What I liked about this issue the most, I really liked the issue, but what I liked about it the most was that we found the daughter.
Yeah.
Yes. My fear was that, so he goes, he had put a tracker on her when she was 6 because someone tried to kidnap her. So he had put a little subcutaneous tracking module in her. And so that's what they were using to find her in Chicago with him and the Navy SEALs that survived the helicopter crash. And they get to where she's supposed to be, and he finds the tracking module that had been dug out of her sitting on like a paper towel in a room. And I was like, oh, fuck, we're going to spend like 4 issues trying to find the daughter. But no, they find her by the end of the issue. So I like that.
That's a really good point.
We're moving quickly. Like I was like, because it's only 6 issues. And I was like, how long are we going to stretch this out? And I was really glad we didn't. So now I don't know where this is going, because I assumed it was going to be like a, you know, find the daughter, obstacle, find the daughter, obstacle, find the daughter, obstacle, and then find the daughter. Now it's like we've got her. So now what happens? So that was good. And then she's working for a company called Terra Salvation that's staying behind to try to fix Earth. And so there's tension in terms of philosophy of, you know, are you abandoning Earth or are you leaving it? And it's good. I just don't like the main character at all. He's awful.
And that's fair, but I do think that he is showing... So what's interesting is that he is showing self-reflection. Like, he is recognizing the things that he did wrong, but he is thus far unable to completely abandon that. But he is trying really hard to do the right thing, and I find that interesting. There is an email chain in here where he writes to her, and he's trying to, like, figure out where she is, and she's so pissed off.
Yeah.
And then in doing that, he reverts to the same things. Like, he's resentful about it, and you know, it just plays into everything that she already thinks about him, and it's everything he's already done. And you know, normally when you get to a page of text like that, you know, it grinds everything to a halt. It didn't. It totally showed us where we were. I also like this story. I understand this story, and I think that it's done really well. Like, he's not a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's Tony Stark or he's whatever. You know, he is trying to do his best. It's just like, is he capable of it? And does that make him bad? You know, maybe he shouldn't have been a dad, but whoever. Like, I think it's a very non-black and white issue of how you sort of, like, how you've lived your life. Anyway, sorry, the last thing that I really like about it is that he's got these special forces guys or whatever they are to that brought him down. He's the most important man in the world. Like, that should be noted. Like,
he's running the project that's saving
everyone. Yeah. I mean, so more or less, like, he's doing the most important. He really is doing the most important thing on Earth. And he decides, like, I've got to go get my daughter. And so he's got these guys to go with him. And I love that as soldiers, they're extremely competent. Mm-hmm. And they're not being bitchy at him.
Right.
And they're not, you know what I mean? Because I've seen that story so many times.
Yeah, it's not, you know, it's not Saving Private Ryan where they're resentful of this mission. They're just like, we have this is our mission. We're trying to do it. Let us do it.
And so they do, and they just accept it, which, by the way, is so much more realistic from what I understand of soldiers than what happens in Saving Private Ryan. Saving Private Ryan's a pretty dramatic type of thing of it. Whereas, and I've been listening to the Band of Brothers podcast, and at one point they made a note. They got a note from Dick Winters back early. And
oh yeah, it's
about
I heard that
when
one.
They about when they dropped in and to Normandy, and his note was like, "You're making them look confused. They weren't. They knew what they had to do."
Yeah,
and I love that.
Yeah, we didn't have our stuff, but we knew exactly what we needed to do and where we needed to go.
And that's what this person does. That's what the guy with the mustache and the lady with him, they are not griping at him. They have conversations. They're not automatons. But, you know, it's like, why are you doing this? So this is my job to do it. I have to complete the objective, you know. And he's super competent. They fight off of vagrants. It's a good book, and it is not in a showy way. I also like the art. It is it sort of goes between being very character-driven, and then when he pulls back to show the world, it's almost impressionistic. It's much simpler. There's a shot of Chicago, which is, you know, like, it's basically, you know, there's a warlord, it's a wasteland, you know, and the lines are, you know, there's boats in the river, and
it's almost sketchy. It's really basic. It's almost like a sketch.
Yeah.
Eduardo Ferragato and Natalia Marquez.
Who's listed as a co-creator. I want to note because it's not just that. So, next time it comes out, I'll remember what it is.
There was a couple of books we read this week that were like genre mashups, and I was just really happy that this is just a straight on. Like, it's not even it's sort of a sci-fi story, but it's not really. It's just because it's set in the future, but it could be set now.
Yeah,
it's just a straight on story.
I mean, what, 5 years, 6 years?
I mean, there's no technology here really that is not impossible, other than probably the giant ships taking us off planet. Everything else is pretty much. You know, it's helicopters and machine guns. So I did really like this. I'm glad. I think it was because it was almost the patron pick that we read it, but it was very good.
Yeah. No, I probably would have anyway, just because, and you know, it's you and me, we're so glad that it, you know, and she's a werewolf. You know, like, that didn't happen.
Right. Well, maybe she is. We don't know yet. Let's take a quick break and talk about second print comics. The world of comics, characters, and the universe shattering continuity can get a little complicated. Don't we know that? So what's the best place to start? Our friends at Second Print Comics Podcast have you covered from the viewpoint of two different comic book generations, Mark Claire from the early 90s and Remso Martinez from mid-2000s, bringing deep dives each and every Wednesday into the stories, characters, and events that inspired their comic book fandom. Covering every publisher from Marvel, DC, Image, and Valiant, and everything in between, whether you're a comic book newbie or a seasoned collector, this is the best show to revitalize your fanhood and remember why you became a comic book addict to begin with. Subscribe today from your favorite podcatcher or head over to secondprintcomics.com. And you too can, as Mark and Remso say, read comics and change the world. Plus, they're on Patreon and have a special offer for iFanboy patrons. So those of you in the iFanboy faithful who are patrons, check out the details. They're on our patron page. But we'll tell you right now, Second Print Comics is on patrons as a special offer for you. The deal is this. Any iFanboy patron who signs up for the SPC patron will receive one free month at whatever level they choose to join at. When they sign up, they can simply message the code iFanboy to us at Patreon, and we'll issue you a refund for the first month. This will give you access to all of our bonus content, including shows, the Remso Rants, the Random Marvel Comics Podcast, Remso versus the MCU, Tales from the Fuck It Pile, recaps of every Marvel Disney Plus show, and so much more, all for as little as $5 a month. Go to secondprintcomics.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. So check them out, secondprintcomics.com. Reignite your fandom.
Thank you so much. The Worst Dudes, number 5. I assume that this is not a thing that you read.
I looked at the first issue and I said, this is not something I'm interested in, and I didn't read it.
That's very fair.
Yeah.
This is a 5-issue miniseries from Dark Horse, written by Aubrey Sitterson, with art by Tony Grigori. I would have a hard time explaining what it is. It, Aubrey has a kind of comic book that he likes to do, which is very, I was going to say in your face, but I hate that, but it's kind of like that.
That's his style.
Yeah. And like he wants it to be big and kind of dumb and loud. And this is a lot of those things at once. It's yes, but it's funny and it's crass. It's very, I think if you like, Rick Remender's, let's say more towards the scumbag side of things.
Right.
You might find something you like in here. That point being, I was reading it. I was a little lost for a bit and it was fine. There's sort of, you know, crass humor in there. But I read the last two issues this time and it kind of gelled to me what I was reading. I was like, oh, here's the story. Here's who these characters are, because at first you don't have a context for them. And by the end, I got to the end in part five and I was like, I really enjoyed that. And I kind of surprised myself. In fact, there's a bit at the end where I don't know what it is, but the mission that they have sort of goes sideways at the end. And they're like, oh, well. And the three main characters like get an apartment together so they can hang out. And the one guy's like, how'd you do this? And I don't know what it is, but there's a big, large, pink, fat cat lion man. Uh-huh. And he pulls out like this little gold trinket or whatever, which apparently has power or magic, whatever. Like, where the hell, how do you still have that? And he goes, I keistered it. And I thought, that's the funniest thing I've had all week. I've never heard smuggling something in your butt and then using the word keister as a verb, and it made me laugh. And I told Aubrey, I texted him, and he goes, I can't believe you read through all five issues of that. And I was like, I know, but I really enjoyed it. It is exactly what it promises to be, and a little more. It's over the top. It is it's very silly, but I found it was enjoyable.
Wonder Woman, the 80th anniversary, 100-page super spectacular. Number one, I missed a word there in the script because there's a lot of words in the title. This is the ongoing specials that DC's been doing to honor the 80th anniversary of their big characters because they're all hitting in the last couple of years. I'm not going to go over all nine stories, and I think this issue falls overall at the lower end of the spectrum, like the Aquaman book as opposed to like Green Arrow, or
I think it was slightly better than the Aquaman book.
Yeah, no. Aquaman remains the worst one, but this is better than that. But it's on the more on that side than like Green Arrow and Batman, yes, and Superman and Robin. But I did want to mention a couple of stories. One, the first one, the In Memoriam one, which takes place in the current continuity, which is strange because in the other books, the current continuity story always ended the book. But I didn't get why they started it here because it's sort of a look at her entire history as Steve Trevor shows Etta Candy his documentary he's been making on the sly about Wonder Woman. So it's a good overview of her as a character in a history.
And it's drawn by Jim Chung.
By Jim Chung. Gorgeous.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the current continuity, they all think she's dead, even though she's currently sort of trapped in the God world. So this, you know, he's very sad. But the big news here is that he's started dating again. So when she does come back, it's going to be a problem for whoever he's dating. Because
can I tell you, and I don't want to go through the whole thing either.
Yeah, no, we're not.
It went downhill from there. There was stuff in there that was okay, but after about the halfway point, I was a slog. I was like, oh, this is not getting me anywhere. And it is wholly to the point that literally I think nobody knows who the hell Wonder Woman is, and they don't know how to write her. And
you know, we talked about that for years. She's on a pedestal for too many creators, and they just won't make her interesting or fallible for
there's not an overarching story for her, for them to grab onto, because they've tried to reinvent her in so many different ways, and that's what they went through here. They just took the different kinds, but anyway, my actual point here is that the conceit of the first story is that Steve Trevor on the side decides to make a documentary, and I was like, that's so fucking stupid. It's so dumb. He's a super soldier.
Yeah, you don't just make a side. You don't know.
You don't just make a documentary. I'm offended.
As a kid, he made documentaries. You don't know. There's people are multifaceted.
Whatever. That's hard. And
also, maybe it's not good. We don't know. All we're seeing is the still images.
It's not good. There's no way that what he did was good. And that's why I'm offended.
Because it's the backup they've been running. That's like a young readers. And I got bored of that, so I skipped that one. The Inner Reader one was fine. I really liked the Dear Diana, Mark Waid, Jose Luis Garcia Lopez story.
That was my favorite.
I thought he was dead, Jose Luis Garcia Lopez. So I was glad to see he's not dead.
Not only is he not dead, I was like, this is gorgeous. That was
still
a fun story.
He has it. He's one of the most important artists of all time at DC. And A lot of people don't know that, but this was a great story in which Wonder Woman gets really tired of being the Justice League sounding board and therapist in sort of the Silver Age era.
God, I like it a gorgeous. Lot.
Yeah.
This guy could draw a book, and I'd be happy with it right now. It's everything I want. How come Mark Waid's so good? How come he's the only guy who can do this?
Because he's a talented writer who understands the history of the characters and their essence. He's like the perfect Geoff Johns, you know, essence of the character writer. It's just that, you know, he's been an DC exile because he and Dan DiDio did not get along. So hopefully.
I know, but like, and that's fair. By the way, if you've ever spent any time, not even with those people, but reading things they've written, totally makes sense, and they're both probably at fault. But like, the fact is,
you mean they're both a little hard-headed,
a little opinionated, entitled, and it's earned entitlement too. Sure. Like, it's not even like, it's like, yeah, you're not wrong. But like, when he shows up, he can do a short story.
Yeah,
he can do an art, like, and it's interesting. It's not like, oh, this is just him doing his thing. Like, it's a different take every time. It's insane how good he is, and I don't think we talk about him in those terms.
No, because we
take him for granted.
For the you know, there was a long time on this show where he was talked about all the time, and then he went off and did, like, he was the editor of Heavy Metal. And
he's the editor-in-chief at Humanoids now, or something.
Yeah, he was doing Archie's. Like, it's just that he's been off in the hinterlands. And then and I love that story. My other favorite one was the totally wacky Tom King Doc Shaner one that takes place in the 60s. And and on social media, Tom King said this was based on a book from the 60s, a story from the 60s. And here, Lois, who is not interested in Clark Kent at all, sets him up on a date with her, the boutique owner of her store. And the boutique owner of her store is Wonder Woman. She doesn't know that. This is back when Wonder Woman had a store. Clothing store in the 60s. And so, wait, why not? She just tried retail for a while. And so they, because, you know, it doesn't take all your time.
It's funny when you say it out loud.
So they go on a date, but Clark's way too square in his gray suit, so in his Don Draper gray suit. So she puts him in like a super mod 60s outfit, and they go to like a club, and he just looks too much like a cop. And I just thought it was a fun, funny story that really allowed Tom King to lean into the 60s tropes and the 60s dialogue. And Doc Shaner was obviously terrific in this. I thought this was a really fun story, too.
Yeah, it was. Anyway.
Yeah, so that's right. There's other, you know, things in here, but this is Stephanie Phillips' story. But for the most part, those three, the opening one, the Mark Waid one, and the King Shaner one were my favorites.
Just try and retail.
Just try and retail.
The Me You Love in the Dark, number 3. This is a dark horse pick up for the pick of the week, because I really liked it, but I don't really have anything
the dark horse
to
pick
say
from
about
Image.
It. Yeah. Yeah, I know. That's what I meant.
This issue was strange, I thought, because, and I like this book, and I've liked the first two issues a lot. It's just moving very quickly. You know?
I'm kind of okay. It's almost like it's like the montage sort of.
Yeah, this
love
issue
story.
would have been the sort of musical montage in the movie where we were just skipping a lot of time to get to where we need to go. But
I like that it's a lot about a mood and a feeling, and it's so different. I would never guess that this is a Scotty Young.
It's very different. I think my problem is, I don't understand why this woman is in love with this strange black spirit, or why she wants to have sex with a strange black spirit. Like, he's done nothing really to show why. It's just sort of happening.
That's true.
Fine. But that's the only thing I think the book is lacking. It's like, why is she not totally freaked out by this? Like, give me something in her head about why this is okay. He's not really humanoid. You know, it's not like it's a handsome, you know, black
apparition.
Right,
I was going to say that. If he was super hot, you'd be like, fair enough, we've all been
right, that's what I mean. Like, if it was like, you know, just a super hot, all black ghost, cool, fair enough. But this is like looks like early Gollum before they made the CGI better in the second Lord of the Rings movie.
I don't know. It's almost like he's saying the right things, and that's almost enough for whatever. But there's a slight hint in this. And I don't know, is this in her mind? There's a little bit of doubt. There's like the darker side of it seems to be very distantly sort of hinted at. And maybe that's not a thing. And I think it'd kind of be interesting if it wasn't a thing. Like, it's just kind of a love story in this weird thing. But I did like how it is so dreamy, mm-hmm. both in sort of in the story and the characters. But although this, I think the characters are fairly well grounded. But I really liked how Jorge Corona interpreted it.
Oh, it's beautiful. And you're gorgeous.
And Bolia. Like, it's just... It's very different from what happens, you know, in so many comic books. And again, I keep looking at it like, I don't know what the script looks like for something like this, because it's so emotionally charged rather than storytelling. It is storytelling. It's right. just, it's a different thing. And I'm impressed by that part.
Yeah, no, it's beautiful looking. It's mm-hmm. unusual. I don't dislike yeah. it at all. I just, at the end of the issue, I was like, why? I need to know why. I need some mm-hmm. some explanation, some interest, or in exploring why that she's into this.
Yep.
I mean, maybe she's just she's lonely. She's dark, but like still some why. So those why? Books we want to talk about, but at patreon.com/ifanboy, every patron can vote to add a book to the rundown. And this week we had a 3-way race for the winner, and the winner by one single solitary vote was Chicken Devil, number one from Aftershock. Written by Brian Buccoletto, art by Hayden Sherman, letters by Hassan Osmane Alahu. And what I appreciated about this issue was that it was a crime story and there was no other situation going on, which is yeah. not unusual with some of the smaller publishers.
That's true.
I also really like the art. It was not what I was expecting from the cover, but I liked it.
I think it was very close to a Breaking Bad sort of situation, and they even reference Breaking Bad yep. in here.
Yeah.
There's a bit in the beginning, it's almost like it moved too fast, or at least there was a couple of beats that needed to be there.
Mm-hmm.
This guy gets up in the morning, he's, you know, arguing with his kid about something. Fine, I understand that. He goes into the city where there's some sort of warehouse, or it's not really explained like what he does or who he is. He's just in this place, and then all of a sudden
he owns a chain of
criminals.
He owns right. a chain of really successful hot chicken restaurants.
And I sorted that out, but it wasn't like I didn't know where he was at the beginning of it. And yeah, not in a way that was like,
I'll say
oh,
the art
clever.
In the beginning, like I didn't know what I was looking at when he gets right. to the warehouse and there's stuff, a bunch of stuff had burned. I was like, what is
right.
what am I looking at? That was the
and problem. Then on the next page, you know, tracksuited, you know, criminals, Russian gangsters are coming in, and I'm like, who are these? And that part of the story was not told well because I couldn't follow it. And I went back, and then there's a lot of people standing around, and I didn't know what had happened. I figured it out later in the issue, but it seems like his partner, they're involved in this successful business, and his partner has aligned himself with criminals to help them smuggle drugs in the chicken stuff, which again, very Breaking Bad.
Yeah,
and then his family gets blown up, and
which I actually appreciated. At first, I was like, "Oh shit!" But at least something completely unexpected happened. Like I didn't think
yes.
they would like he would, you know, his partner was helping smuggle drugs for this gang. The fire in the warehouse destroyed one of the shipments. Although it didn't, turns out the partner had stolen the shipment, and. So obviously their families are threatened by the gang, and they say you're gonna, you know, you and all the people you love will die if we don't get our money. They try to escape via yacht from the port,
which
of
is
Marina
weird. Also, I chartered a yacht. Okay, that's a weird choice.
So the family gets on the yacht, and he's like, "I got to go take care of this. Just I'll meet you somewhere else." And then the yacht explodes. So I was like, "Whoa, shit! That's a bold choice because
that takes a large bomb." By the way,
yeah. Yeah.
That's a big explosion.
And so now this guy is on his own. I read once this became like a contender for the patron pick, I read the solicit for it. And I guess the whole pitch behind this book is, you know, these ordinary guys who get caught up in crime and have to get themselves out of it stories. The idea was those guys are always way more competent than you would think they would be. And so this guy is basically a normal guy who's not competent. He's not brave. He can't shoot a gun. He can't outthink so it's the idea of what would a normal guy do in this situation? And I don't know. It seems like he goes crazy and wears the chicken suit, the mascot suit. But
I
don't know.
I think it's very thin. I think the concepts,
it moved very quickly. I did like, by the end, I did really like the art. I liked the use of the fisheye a lot. I thought there was interesting angles. Uh-huh. I thought the last page, that really low angled, extreme sort of focus on the, like, I thought that was interesting. There were problems at the beginning, but by the end of it, I liked it more. It just moved very quickly. His mom was a criminal.
His mom is Mac's dad from Always Sunny.
How did he get up to Central California and back so quickly?
It is one of those things that has a high concept and it moves really fast and you kind of either enjoy the ride or you don't, is what I think it is. It's not going to be a lot of like explaining. It doesn't seem like it's very deep on character stuff.
Right.
Which is probably what it should be, but I was left, you know, like underwhelmed, I guess. I think it wasn't, like I said, it was too thin for me.
Mm-hmm.
Is a concept that's sort of familiar in a bunch of different ways, and it didn't surprise me at any point. I mean, the thing that you found surprising was that they actually introduced something with stakes.
Yes.
And that should be a surprise. That should be, that's like a basic move. Yeah. And I also, we weren't around long, and maybe this is part of it, like, we weren't around long enough to know this guy or care about him.
Right.
And
it's easier on TV when it's an actor you can attach emotional resonance to, because you've seen Jason Bateman in a lot of things. So when Ozark starts in almost the same way, and this was very much like Ozark mixed with Breaking Bad, because that's what, you know, in Ozark the partner cheats the criminals and it's up to this one guy to clean up the mess, but
it's up to Michael Bluth to solve it.
But you can attach historical emotional attachment to an actor.
That's a really good point.
You can't to a drawing. So,
and this is a TV script. I mean, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but it genuinely feels like this was a pilot script and they made it into a comic book.
Possibly. I mean, Buccoletto, he's writing a lot of comics, but who knows?
Yep. Well, I mean, and I don't blame somebody for that. They're saying, well, this genre works in TV, let's try it in comics. Not even like in a... like, oh, we can't make it on TV, let's make it here. It's just, it's a style of storytelling.
Right.
Yeah.
So what was your rating on Chicken Devil, number one, ratings?
2.5.
Out of 5? I'm going to give it a 3.
Mm-hmm.
Sticking with it?
No.
I don't think I am either. If someone handed me the trade for it, I'd probably read it. But...
It could very much, you know, first issue... it has to do a lot of work, but sure. At the end, it wasn't, you know, and by the end, maybe it'll be great. That's very possible. You know, all the ingenuity could be later, but the first part, it just wasn't enough that was unique or interesting.
Yeah. Patreon.com/iFanboy. Every page can vote out a book to the rundown, but if you give it the $5 or higher level, you get your own superpower live on the show, like these four patrons. And someone asked on one of our last, was it the Hangout or was it the show? I don't remember what. Like, you know, there's a lot of people. So if you signed up this year, you're still on the list. It's just going to get to you. Just a lot of people to get through.
Yep. Yep. And we pay a lot of attention to it. If somebody, you know, was, you know, lets us, if you think that you should have had yours, it's been years or whatever, like, let us know and we will take care of it. But we're on it as much as it's possible to be.
Yep.
So, yeah, we're not taking this part lightly because we know that it's cool and you've done your part. We got to do ours.
Yep.
Adam Steen's part is that he can do basic landscaping with his mind.
Oh, well,
yeah.
there's some similar powers this week.
Oh, good.
Good.
You know, you know, we're talking about yards.
Cuts the grass. Cuts the hedges.
You know, retaining walls. You know, like kills
nothing
off
crazy.
The weeds.
He can't dig a pool.
No, he's not digging a pool, and he's not doing like an industrial site. You know, they've built like an office park, and you're doing it's not
backyard.
That. You know, it's something that you could do with a buddy and possibly a bobcat.
Right.
You know, but he's like a Magneto, but for neighborhood landscaping.
Right.
Thing is, we don't know if he's interested in landscaping at all. Like, for example, I hate landscaping.
Mm-hmm.
I will do the bare minimum.
But if you could Magneto that shit.
Maybe. But I'm also just not interested in it. Because the idea about it is, all you're doing is cleaning something up that will make itself messy all on its own in a short amount of time.
It's like cutting your hair.
Yeah, but my hair looked good.
Juan Ramirez should team up with Adam because... Juan Ramirez can, at a touch, rebuild any structure. So, like, if you've got, like, an old falling down garage in the back of your property, uh-huh. and you're just like, oh, fuck, this is never going to get fixed. Juan could touch it, and it restores to its original glory.
Fully, like paint and like electricity. And this is only structures, so like a dirty old shoe.
No, it's got to be like a building.
Okay.
And it has to be there. It's not like he can return an old building. Okay. Too. He's got to be able to touch the part of it at least, and it comes back.
Right.
Bring it back.
Every homeowner in the world just had like a fantasy. Oh my God.
But it's the original. He can't, you know, if you're in a house that's been heavily, you know, like updated and modified and modernized, if he does that, it's going to be back to its original 1950s, you know, glory.
Okay, is it the whole thing or is it only part of it?
It's the whole thing.
So, for example, I have a house that was built in the 70s, right. which, as far as I can tell, was the worst time to build a house. and at some point, they added a garage onto the house.
Yeah. Is it detached?
If he fixes the house, no, it's attached.
Oh, you're in trouble.
If he fixes the house, does the garage disappear?
No.
What about the code?
No.
What about, we had to bring it up to code because it was built in the 70s, which I previously mentioned was the worst time to build a house.
Any modernization is gone.
I'm rethinking the benefit of this at all. He'd be really good for sort of the late era, like prefab housing that is all just junk that melts in rain.
Listen, it doesn't mean that it's not always a benefit, but he could fix things, you know.
On the other hand, the sort of restoration of sort of the what do you call it, like a you make a building important and you save them,
historical restorations,
that kind of thing. You know, this is George Washington's childhood home.
Yes,
you know,
it would actually be authentically restored as opposed to whatever they've done.
Landmark was the word I was looking
landmark
for.
Landmark restorations.
Craig Smith can convert any non-biodegradable garbage into delicious Skittles. Now, that could cause its own problems.
Sure.
Nor do I know if Skittles are in fact biodegradable.
Sure.
Like if you had like a cubic acre of Skittles, would they be around for a million years? I don't know.
It'd be delicious though.
It would be. And, you know, there's other health problems that could come from eating only Skittles.
I don't know the last time I had a Skittle.
Have you ever had a sour Skittle?
Probably. Skittles was one of my go-to candies in my teens and 20s. As I've aged into someone who shouldn't be eating candy, I don't think I've had it in probably 10 years.
I mean, I'm going to ask you, what's the point of a life where you shouldn't be eating candy?
I probably have some of it, you know. Yeah, it's probably a Halloween where I probably had like a small pack of Skittles. But, you know, I used to be like, you know, get a big bag of Skittles.
Yeah.
College, it was Starbursts.
I remember that.
Yeah, I love Starbursts.
So that garbage is going to be Skittles. And it's not like they're in packages either.
It's just a fucking pile of Skittles. You better get the ones on top.
And you better also hope that they're the regular Skittles and not some weird fucking tropical fruit limited edition one that does taste like shit.
Alex Mansfield, and this may be a dupe power, but it's okay. Alex Mansfield, when he sings karaoke, and I mean like the full on, like the screen and the backup music, not like singing in his car or in the in the shower or anything. When he does karaoke, he becomes the singer. Like he becomes David Bowie or he becomes whoever. That turns into that person for the duration of the song. So it sounds just like him, looks just like him, is them.
Yeah. I don't think you've done that before.
But it's not, you know, you can't put him on stage at the Grammys to bring back a dead singer. Like, he's got to be on a karaoke place.
Oh, but you couldn't mic a low-rent karaoke setup for the Grammys and have him come on and do it?
No, it's got to be a karaoke location. I guess they could cut to a camera at the karaoke location, but it's got to be at a karaoke location.
So I did karaoke one time, and it was at the Camp Fuzz, the Dinosaur Junior Rock Camp.
Yep.
And I was like, fuck it, I'm going to do this here because I've always been terrified to do it.
Yeah.
And no one cared. It's whatever. But there was one guy, and he did a B-52s song, and apparently he's in a very successful B-52's tribute band. And so he did all the Fred Schneider parts.
Of course he did.
And people were just blown away by it.
Sure.
And I was annoyed for some reason. Just came, was like, oh God, it was grating. It's like, I don't like that anyway. Not a guy who's doing it.
My favorite thing about karaoke is when someone who is totally unexpected is good at it.
Oh yeah.
Were you there when our old coworker Will suddenly did it at some place we were at?
No.
He's like the quietest, shyest guy, like gentle giant guy, like a huge mountain of a man. And somewhere we went, I don't know where it was because it was like 15 years ago. He did like karaoke with the band scenario, and he was incredible. And it was great. And it's like this, I was like, I never would have imagined that in a million years. Also, at Darwin Cook's wedding, I mean, it's not surprising because he's in a band, but Mike Allred was terrific. They had a karaoke in the band scenario for the wedding. And
Oh wow, that's cool.
Yeah,
that's
he was fun. Really, really good.
I went to a work thing. And there's this guy, and he was the head of IT. Mm-hmm. And he was one of those guys that you, not IT, engineering, more or less, whatever, it wasn't called that. But and he's a guy who was very, very, very straightforward. And in meetings, he would be the person who was annoyed when things went off track of where they were supposed to go and just like kept everything in.
Yep.
And then at a holiday party, they did karaoke with the band. And he got, I don't remember the song he did, but I have never been so impressed by a person doing it. It was just from out of nowhere, like, great voice.
Yeah.
He was dancing. He did the whole, and it was like, it was revelatory. And I thought of him completely different after that.
Yeah. It's great.
It's kind of cool.
Yeah. Anyway, look, we can keep talking about this.
This is why we're running really long. This is just reminiscing day. and the people who allow us to run long like this are the patrons. You can obviously get your superpower if you're at the $5 level higher, but there's other things involved with it. The patrons have unlocked the patron pick, the talk splodes, the book splodes, the media splodes, YouTube content being uploaded, monthly hangouts, Discord and Facebook patron groups. There are new stretch goals. You can read about them. We've talked about them before, but a comic book TV show, special edition, and then after that, barbecue video show at the next level. We'll see if those ever happen.
Comic TV show special editions, like shows for comic book shows that have finished, not just one episode.
It's out there. Yeah. We're okay. Yeah. The people who do it, we cannot thank you enough. You know, I think that it's really revitalized everything about... It's been going on a while now, but I still think of it as new because we've been doing this for so long. I think it's had a real revitalizing force, not just, you know, in people, you know, coming in and giving money, but just sort of our commitment to having to do this thing because we're beholden to you people in a way that... to you people in a way that we were not before. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that. Get over to ifanboy.com. I'm sorry. ifanboy.threadless.com, and you can find our 11 t-shirts designs. But listen, t-shirts, that's only your start. Mm-hmm. I'm waiting. I got a new phone, and I'm waiting for the upgraded cases because I'm going to make this happen now. I haven't decided which one.
You don't know?
I'm leaning towards Clint is dead. But also, I really like a GDAT.
Yeah.
Because it's ridiculous. Yes. And also, I think we should sell at least one thing that has GDAT on it.
Oh, yeah. It's just the least seller, which is fine. I don't really care.
We're working on at least one other one right now.
I have a GDAT t-shirt.
I know. I have to get it. I just haven't done it in a while. I only have two of them, but I wear them all the time. No, it's not true. I have three. One doesn't fit anymore. But I wear them a lot. They're great shirts. ifanboy.com/support, it's a PayPal link. ifanboy.com/Amazon, you will find links to buy the Booksplodes, and the music is always linked on the show page, and there's a general link for Amazon if you that's an affiliate account. Go do that if you're going to order that stuff anyway. That'd be helpful. I think, my friend, we're going to have to save these. Oh, we can do the voicemail, I guess.
No, it's too long.
Okay. Yeah. We're going to save these. We'll get them for next week.
I just want to mention that Mike from Buffalo, New York, sent in a voicemail for our 800th episode, and we'd planned to do it on the 800th episode. We were going to end the show with the voicemail, but it did not work from the live stream. No one could hear it, including, most importantly, the co-hosts. So we would have done it if the chat room couldn't hear it, but Josh and Ryan couldn't hear it, so we couldn't do it. We want to find a way to do it. It's just long, so we'll have to do it another week, perhaps.
But. I will do this one from Dan.
Yeah.
Dan said, I loved 800. Just finished after listening through the week. Question, How did Ryan feel the next day? Or how's he feeling today?
He's fine. He got drunk and then he was fine. That's how it
works. He got unexpectedly drunk with the one drink.
Yeah.
And at the beginning of the thing, his wife made him the drink. So, you know, I don't know what's going on there. At the beginning, I thought that's a very full glass. There was never a second one. He was drinking water. It just got him.
That was my favorite bit as I was editing in the show. You said, "Well, that looks really full." And I was like, "Oh, at this point, Josh isn't." It's like foreshadowing, and you didn't even realize it. But he was fine. He's a young guy. He had one. He was tired. He got drunk very hilariously, and then he was fine the next day.
Yeah, it wasn't like he woke up in an alley.
No.
And was like, "Oh no, what did I do? There's blood on my shoes." Like, he just became much less able to explain comic books and science. That's what happened. It was there. He just couldn't find it.
Yeah. It was good. But he was okay.
Thanks. That was a super fun show.
Contact@fanboy.com. That's where you can write in. Thanks, Dan, and all those who wrote in this week. And we'll try to get more of the emails in the show. And you can also write in for Media Splode. Just put that in the subject line so we know that you mean it for the Media Splode show, which is coming up soon. I'll get to that in a second. So here's what we have going on. Again, this is the part of the show I do for my health. Josh's Talksplode Matthew Rosenberg show is out behind the show in the feed. Not directly, but two back. And that's his most recent Talksplode, talking to Matthew Rosenberg, one of the hot new writers. I say that, but he's been around for like...
Ever.
5 years. But he's finally becoming a big name and now as he moves from Marvel over to DC. So we'll listen to that conversation this week.
But it's largely about his new creator-owned series, which is fantastic, and you should pre-order it.
Which has a music tie-in, so check that out.
Yep.
This coming week, if all goes to plan, there'll be a Media Splode. We're planning on recording it, so hopefully it comes out. But we're going to be talking about Ted Lasso Season 2, which just wrapped up, and we're also going to be reviewing The Many Saints of Newark, the Sopranos film. So those are going to be the two main topics. You can check those out on the Media Splode, hopefully coming to you this very week. And then the rest of this month, there should be three shows coming. A special edition about What If, which also just wrapped up its season. A special edition on Injustice, the film, the next DC animated film, which comes out at the end of the month. And perhaps even a Talksplode that Josh has been talking about having already booked.
Mm-hmm.
So those, you can look forward to those three. And then next month, the month of November, there should be a Booksplode, which Josh and I should really start talking about. Because
we talked about it a little.
Yeah, we just have to figure it out, the logistics. And then in November, you should also get a Shang-Chi review because that's when it hits streaming. And Eternals comes out in November. We'll have to figure that out. Josh, I've been thinking and I may try to go to daytime movie shows. That might feel better about going
there.
That are less full. So maybe I'll try to see Eternals on this big screen in the daytime. Because I feel like Chloe Zhao shoots a beautiful film, and I've heard this is really gorgeous, so maybe I'll try to see that on the big screen. But anyway, the point is Shang-Chi will come out on November. Unless something happens and we see it, so Josh and I both go see it. It's all up in the air right now. But that's for all those people who keep asking who don't listen to this part of the show.
Head over to finbar.com. You can find all the shows, all the vast history of comic book writing from our writers that have been on there and ourselves. You can go to facebook.com/ifanboy, @ifanboy on Twitter, @ifanboycomics on Instagram. You can find out what the pick of the week is before the shows come out. You can follow us individually @CS Kilpatrick and JA Flanagan on Instagram. If you like movie stills from classic films or you like some wanker on a guitar.
I haven't even had time to post anything. I'm just so tired.
No, I know.
I'm just so tired and busy.
You can subscribe to our YouTube page at youtube.com/ifanboy, and you can keep up to date with the old video show reuploads. That's a misnomer, that sentence. Keep up to date on the old things. But if you were to go there in the past week, you would have found there's a mini, and if you want to know what comics were coming out on the week of July 2nd, 2008, well, pal, I got something special for you.
And you want a sleeveless Josh to tell you?
Are you kidding me?
No, you're out on the street of Queens and no sleeves.
Whoa, I'm sorry. This says WonderCon 2021, but of course it is WonderCon 2010 that it is. I write the year a lot, and I guess I went into autopilot. Yep. Kick ass. With a review
of the comic. This is before the movie came out.
And an interview with the cast and John Romita Jr.
Yeah.
That was the first movie I saw after my first son was born. I got like not too long after I went to like a screening.
Yeah, you and I went to the
Oh, you
screening.
Were there?
Yeah.
And they were all the people that were
Romita was there, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It was like the Marvel screening.
I was like in a haze at that point. I was like Ryan.
Yeah, this was the show that came out right before the film. So it was a review of the book. And then Ron had interviewed the cast at WonderCon the previous couple of weeks. So that was there. And then also Romita as well. That was the really Wrap awkward interview with Aaron Johnson. And also Chloe.
That's a guy that I never recognized from one movie to the next.
He's changed.
Which I guess is good for an actor.
If you like the show, write a review or leave a star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast, whatever aggregator you use. Please consider doing that. It helps every podcast you listen to, not just ours. So just take a moment to leave a star rating. It really helps everyone. And even better than that is word of mouth. Tell your friends. If someone asks, hey, I want to start listening to podcasts. I like comics. Which one should I listen to? We're always grateful when people mention iFanboy. Thank you very much. And that's it for this week's show. I am Connor.
I'm Josh. Thanks so much.